Hey, everybody, welcome into the podcast. We are back with another special bonus episode.
Bonus episode.
Brad, it's been a while since we've done a bonus episode. This feels fresh. This feels new.
I know. I didn't even know, like, what to say there for a minute.
You had to think through your reaction.
I did. It's been a while. I didn't know if my voice could hit that low register that it normally does.
I'll tell you what, man. Not only has it been a while since we've done a bonus episode in general, it's been a long time since we've done one in the vein we're doing today, which is one of our top fives episodes.
Wait, we're doing a top five?
Yeah, you better think quick.
Bob, that is that's so exciting, man. I'm pumped.
So if you've been listening to the podcast for an extended period of time, you've probably heard us do these before. Brad and I are going to walk through our top five movies on a given topic while we do it. And today's whiskey is being brought to you by the Luca Mariano Distillery. Now, this is a new distillery that has popped up in Kentucky. They are, from what I understand, distilling their own product, but it has not matured yet. So they are sourcing their whiskey. I think that they are now a member of the Kentucky Bourbon Trail, which is really, really cool. And I have to say, you know, we reached out to them months and months ago and told them up front, like, hey, it's going to take a while to get you on the show. And they were like, absolutely, take your time. Brad, the package we got from Luca Mariano might be one of the best packages we've ever received.
Bro, it was absolutely gorgeous. Like, the effort and time that Luca Mariano has put into their just image is impressive. And, you know, the disclaimer is always just beware of packaging because you never know what is actually in the bottle. But I'm just going to spoil. I'm excited for this Luca Mariano because it's pretty tasty, Bob.
Yeah, seriously. Like, we got this package and it came with five different kinds of whiskey. They sent us rocks glasses. They sent us these really nice, like, ceramic coasters to go with it. They sent us a t-shirt. Like, it was an insane attention to detail. And I'm thinking to myself, like, man, I'm gonna have to talk nice about this no matter what, like, even if it's terrible whiskey. Brad, I tried all five of these already. Now, albeit it's been like over a month since I've tried them, but I liked all five of them enough that I would, in a vacuum, like, I would recommend all five of these whiskeys. We're going to give more detailed notes as we go, but I just want to say from the top here, this place is knocking it out of the freaking park, man. All right. So, Brad, why don't you walk us through our topic for the day as we get into our top fives?
We are going through top five bubble butts in movies.
Number one, Marlon Brando in Apocalypse Now.
That's tag on.
Boom. All right, fine. I'll do it. We're going to be doing the top five movie endings. You know, we thought with the onset of fall, summer is coming to a close officially. Like, Ohio this week went from being 90 degrees to a high of 70 all week. Fall came on really, really quickly here. And of course, fall is all about things ending. So we figured, hey, let's lean into that. We're going to do top five movie endings. We did have some discussion, Brad, back and forth about, like, what constitutes an ending. Is it like the whole third act? Is it just the final few moments of a movie? I don't know. Where are we coming down on this?
Well, the reason this came up is because I'm going to give one of my honorable mentions right now. I think that Return of the Jedi has one of the greatest final 40 minutes in movie history. And so for me, that to me was like probably a top two or three in this list. But as we talked about it, we were like, no, like, we're not talking about the final act of a movie. What we're talking about here is ending scenes, like the final line of a movie. What is just the best endings to a movie? And I think our limit is pretty much like the final scene, the final few minutes of a movie.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Like, I don't think it has to be, you know, best final 10 seconds, but I also don't think that you can just say, oh, I loved all eight endings of Return of the King. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
there has to be some sense of finality. There has to be some sense of this is actually the end of the movie. So yeah, it sounds kind of vague, but I think you guys are going to understand what we're getting at here. Well, now, hey, Brad, go ahead.
Yeah. So, like, the perfect example for this, and this movie isn't on either of our lists, even though I think it's a great ending, would be Inception, right? Like, the ending of Inception, he meets his family, he sees his kids' faces for the first time, and then the top doesn't fall, or does it? Right? Like, that would be, for a lot of people, like, a top five ending to a movie. So that's the kind of stuff we're talking about here, Bob.
So I was just reading an article today, and I'll post it in the show notes, because it was super interesting, but it was all about how this person's been watching a lot of classic movies, and they said the trend that they saw was that back in the day, movies just ended. Like, when the plot was done and the bad guy was dead, they were like, fade out, the end. Yeah. And nowadays, it seems like movies go on 40 minutes after it seems like their plots resolve. And I think that's actually kind of true. And I'm interested to see how it plays out in our top fives here. But there is something to say about a movie that's just like, hey, we're done. We're done with the story. We hope you enjoyed. See you later. You know,
we're done movieing now.
So, Brad, I kept my top five, because this is going to get extra spoilery, obviously. I kept my top five to movies that we've actually done on the podcast. Are all five of yours movies from the podcast?
Four out of the five are.
All right, cool. So maybe when we get to the one that isn't, just give a spoiler warning and we can tell people to skip ahead a little bit. But I want to dive in, man. And as we dive in, we're trying the first of these five Luca Marianos, which is their Old Americana Small Batch Bourbon. This is 83 proof. It's 4.5 years old. Again, this is sourced whiskey. Wilderness Trail is making it for them. We're going to give notes kind of as we talk. But Brad, hit us with your number five movie ending.
Well, my number five movie ending is Citizen Kane.
Oh, nice. Oh, what a great ending.
The whole movie, you're just wrapped up in this enigma of a human being that is, you know, Charles Foster Kane. Which is just, I think it's one of the best movie names in existence.
Oh, yeah.
But there's something about the ending when they're throwing away all of his junk and you see the sled go in and it has the word Rosebud on it. And it's this word you've been like wondering about the whole movie. Like, why was that the last word on this dying, you know, just insanely wealthy man's lips? And it just ties together the entire movie. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just such a great way. It's one of the best payoffs in movie history.
Yeah. And again, it's one of those things that's like, all right, here's the payoff and it explains everything and credits.
And done. Right. Yeah. Yeah, you're right, man. I didn't even realize that would like illustrate your point perfectly.
Listen, as we comment on the movie, though, I want to say this Old Americana is freaking fantastic at 83 proof. Nice and spicy, really sweet. The nose was all peanut butter for me. I didn't get any peanut butter on the palate, but it was like really herbal. They're off to a good start here, man.
I'm in a different spot, Bob. Did you ever have like cream of wheat growing up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's kind of what I'm tasting here.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's just kind of corny. It's wheat. It's smooth. I will say that. It is very, very smooth. It's a little bit bland for me, though.
I don't know, man. I will say we've had a few 80 proofers on this podcast, and I think this one has more character than almost anything at this proof point that we've had. Like, it's really hard to get any depth of flavor on an 80 to 85 proof bourbon.
Yeah, it's similar to how it's hard to get any depth of character on your takes. So why don't you hit us with your fifth movie, Bob?
Well, my number five movie ending is one that is sure to elicit joy from Brad. I actually went with E.T. And here's why I went with E.T. Because I think that, like, if you just take the last 10 minutes of that movie, Brad, even as a guy who doesn't care for that movie that much, the last 10 minutes of that movie are, like, absolutely unassailable to me. The kids are all racing to try to get back to the ship. They all fly. You get the John Williams theme. They come back down to Earth. Everybody meets up at the spaceship. You have this incredibly cathartic moment with E.T. Elliot finally comes of age. And as he comes of age and watches E.T. go up in the spaceship again, you get the John Williams fanfare with the timpani at the end. And Elliot's transformation is complete. Like, there is, man, I got to tell you, there is almost no movies I can think of that have an ending sequence with as much action and suspense and movement and payoff and emotional depth to end a movie than E.T. does.
Bob, I have three thoughts for you. Are you ready?
Ugh, yes.
Thought number one, we literally just got done explaining the rules that it couldn't be like a long sequence. It had to be just the final scene. But that's okay. I'm fine with it.
Okay. I mean, I would consider that like one scene, but that's fine.
Okay. Okay. Thought number two, the only good part about the end of that movie is the John Williams theme. I'm with you on that. And thought number three, the way you described Elliot coming of age sounded like he was like a transformer, like becoming Optimus Prime. Like he transformed before our eyes.
It's like the end of 2001, where he just is an old man all of a sudden. You're like, wait a minute. What just happened?
Yes. Oh, man. Yeah, you, Bob, this is America. You are entitled to your opinion. And I'm,
so am I to understand that you don't get even a little bit emotional at the end of E.T.?
Bob, as you said that the ending of E.T. was one of your top fives, I literally was like, oh, crap. How does E.T. end? Wait, they're running from the cops. I don't really remember anything after that. What happens?
Everyone dies.
Yeah. I legit couldn't remember anything other than riding their bicycles away from the police.
All right. Well, that's my number five. Brad, I've already poured out our next whiskey for the day, which is the Old Americana Rye. So we had a bourbon. Now we have a rye. Same proof point, 83 proof. You're a rye guy. What are you thinking of the rye here, Brad?
You know, it feels really similar to the bourbon. It's still just kind of creamy, and in a bland way. For me though, this one actually has a little bit of that rye spice to it.
Mm-hmm.
That gives me, it's a nice young rye. You know, there's a little bit of that youngness. There's a decent amount of rye. It's a solid young rye. There's nothing to complain about it. If I had to score it out, I'd probably give it like, I don't know, like a 26, 27 out of 50.
Wow. See, I think I know where you're going to go as we like increase in proof here. But I got to say, man, keeping it perspective for me that I don't really like 80 proof whiskey at all. I think these two are really shining examples of what low proof whiskey can taste like. So I'm definitely higher on both of these two than you are. And I'm going to jump in with my number four movie ending and we'll see if you're as high on that as I am. I picked Pulp Fiction. And once again, like, you know, we can nitpick about like how long is the ending? Is it just the whole sequence at the diner? But like, even if you just take the last 5-ish minutes when Samuel L. Jackson tells Tim Roth's character to sit down and gets his wallet back and then goes over, exegetes the Bible at him and says, like,
yep,
this is what I think this verse means.
I've been saying that shit for years. And if you heard it, that meant your ass. I never gave much thought to what it meant. I just thought it was some cold-blooded shit to say to a motherfucker before I popped a cap in his ass. But I saw some shit this morning made me think twice. See, now I'm thinking, maybe it means you're the evil man, and I'm the righteous man. And Mr. 9mm here, he's the shepherd protecting my righteous ass in the valley of darkness. Or it could mean you're the righteous man and I'm the shepherd. And it's the world that's evil and selfish. Now, I'd like that. But that shit ain't the truth. The truth is you're the weak and I'm the tyranny of evil men. But I'm trying, Ringo. I'm trying real hard to be the shepherd.
That last monologue is freaking powerful, and it's so quiet. And I think that's the thing that stands out to me about that movie is, like, there's so much going on in that movie. It is, like full to the gills with weird shit, like the gimp and everything else. And the way the movie ends is with Samuel L. Jackson delivering this incredibly quiet monologue. And then they just kind of stand up and John Travolta's like, hey, listen, like, we got to go. And they're like, yeah, cool. And they tuck their guns into the waistband of their like gym shorts and walk out. And that's the end of the movie. It is such a perfect ending. It has comedy. It has drama. It has incredible acting. And I think it's one of the top five that we've done on this podcast.
And I think that ending also, it illustrates the power of non-sequential storytelling. Because as he's giving this dialogue, you know the outcome for Travolta.
Right.
Like, you know what's going to happen to him and his philosophy. And so there's something about that, that it's just such a powerful ending. Yeah, Bob, I love that choice at number four.
All right, Brad. Well, let's see if I can poop on all your dreams here. And let's see what your number four is.
Oh, dude, there's no way you can. Silence of the Lambs. I do wish we could chat longer, but I'm having an old friend for dinner. Goodbye.
What a great closing line.
Oh, dude, it gives, like, literally right now, I just have the chills. Like, thinking about him at the payphone, looking at the psychologist, mm-hmm. is literally the definition of creeping. Like, if you look up creeping in the dictionary, it will be a picture of that movie scene.
You know, I will say, having watched that really recently, you and I for the podcast, man, like, two things I'll point out. I've always been bothered by Anthony Hopkins' beach hair at the end of the movie. Like, it's hard for me to take you seriously with, like, the blonde locks poking out under your, like, Tommy Bahama hat.
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
But also, like, he follows the guy at such a close distance that it's kind of funny to think that he didn't notice him. Yeah, he's, like, standing right behind him as they walk into that crowd. And the guy's, like, frantically looking around, like, I wonder if Dr. Lecter's here. And he's like, yeah, dude, he's, like, 4 feet from you.
I'm right behind you now, Clarice. Oh,
man. But seriously, fantastic pick, man. I love Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah. I think if I had to give that movie an award, it would be the most surprisingly beloved movie for me out of any movie we've watched on this podcast. I was dreading going into that film, and holy crap, was I blown away.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that, man.
But hopefully we are just as blown away by their 103 bourbon. Now, Bob.
Oh, Luca, nice segue, man.
Thank you. Luca Mariano, which I keep wanting to say it with, like, the most Italian accent possible. Like, Luca Mariano.
I'm Mariano. Dude, they're never sending us any more whiskey now.
Oh, like, never, gosh. Ever. Buffalo Trace is never going to send us whiskey. Luca Mariano's never going to send us whiskey. I'm sorry, guys.
The list just grows longer.
Their 103 bourbon, it's interesting to me. Like, jumping up 20 points on the proof scale, like, that's no joke, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, I'm just really excited to get into this bourbon. And even as I just nose it, I'm like, oh, this has character. Mm-hmm. Like, whereas the first two came across as a little bit bland, this one has some character. It's got some, like, brown sugar, some corn. There's a little bit of heat coming off of the nose. Yeah. I'm more excited for this one, Bob.
Yeah, there's some fruit in here, too, that I'm really struggling to pin down because it's not like a typical one we normally get. It's not apple. It's not peach. I was thinking plum, like a pruny kind of taste. It has this really distinct, it's not tropical, so I'm just going to say stone fruit, but almost a winey character to it. And this is not one that's been finished in any sort of wine barrels. And I really, really like it, man. It's this dark kind of red wine, like just tinge to it. And you're right. I think jumping up the 20 proof points, it has a depth of character that the 83s didn't have. It does lean into that sort of, like, darker, sweeter element, but it has this great fruit note to go with it. Man, I am really digging this single barrel 103.
I believe that the fruit you're looking for is Kiwano or durian. It's a very unique, Bob.
I don't know if I've ever talked about this on the podcast, but my son got absolutely obsessed with this YouTube video last year, and it was just called How to Slice Every Fruit, and it had a chef, literally, and he was showing you how to slice it, like, to prepare it for people to come over, whatever, but they had him doing, like, wild stuff. Like, he cut a durian, and he was talking about how they smell like feet, and so I don't know if you actually want to tell Luca Mariano that this is durian flavored, because it's definitely not.
I was just trying to think of the most ridiculous fruits I've ever heard of. I had no idea that durian smelled like feet.
Yeah. Well, I will say definitively, this does not smell or taste like feet. Although I guess something tasting like a body part really does go with your Silence of the Lambs pick. So good on you, sir.
There we go.
All right. What's your number three pick, Brad?
Bob, for me, number three is another movie that we watched on the podcast. It is Leonardo DiCaprio in The Aviator.
Oh, nice. See, I thought you were going to go Shutter Island when you said Leo. Man, The Aviator. Also a great ending. Walk us through it, Brad.
Dude, when he gets to the end of that film, I just think there's so much ambiguity with the way he re-engages with his OCD that you're not sure if it's like a spiral back into a unbreakable curse that this mental illness is, or is it almost like a hopeful, like he has his friends around him now that he trusts and, you know, he'll be able to handle this. I think you can take it kind of either way, but either way you take it, it's a phenomenal way to end the movie.
Yeah, Brad, I think we should just go ahead and say this now. We've been kind of talking about it, but every season we do a little bonus episode called The Revisit, where we go back and watch a movie that we've done before, you know, to see if our opinions have changed. And I think that, honestly, we both kind of know what we like and don't like enough that I don't know if The Revisit works as, hey, does our opinion change? I think we're going to start kind of angling the Revisit episodes to be more like, hey, you may have missed this the first time around, but we like it so much that we're going to go back and compel you to watch it again. And I think that The Aviator is probably our leading candidate for next year's Revisit.
Yeah, 100%. This is a movie that, like, I just don't ever hear anybody talk about, and I want everybody to know about it.
Yeah, it might be a perfect movie. Like, one of Scorsese's unsung masterpieces. I think that was a fantastic pick, Brad.
Oh, yeah, for sure. What do you got at number three for me, Bob?
So for number three, it's one that I actually wasn't thinking about doing at first. And then the other night I had a Beatles playlist on and the song Baby, You're a Rich Man came up. And I was like, oh man,
dude, what a song.
And if you know where I'm going with this, then you already know what I'm going to say. But my number three is the end of the David Fincher movie, The Social Network. Brad,
yes.
This is a movie that, like, I think I appreciate it more than I love it. There are other David Fincher movies I like better. I think Zodiac's a better movie than Social Network. And so I don't fall into the this is the best movie of the 21st century camp that a lot of people do with Social Network. However, the last couple minutes of this movie where they cut to that deposition room and Rashida Jones tells him, you know, Mark, you're not an asshole. You're just trying so hard to be. And then they just show him sitting alone, looking up his ex-girlfriend, friend requesting her, and just hitting refresh to see if he can find one friend in life. And in the background, David Fincher puts a Beatles song. And like the significance of that, because the Beatles never allow their music to be used in movies. It costs so much money to use a Beatles song. So like they splurged and they had to get permission for it. But the irony of them singing like, hey, you're because at the time he was the youngest billionaire ever. And he had achieved like this level of power and success that nobody ever had. And yet here he is alone, hoping somebody will be his friend. It is such a perfect use of music as irony and proving the point of the whole movie. Like just a masterful ending sequence.
Well, and also I think that The Social Network is one of the only biographic movies that is a perfectly written story more so than a history, right? Like almost all biopics I watch just struggle with the fact that people's lives are disjointed. They don't make a lot of sense. There's a lot of dull, boring periods. Like in general, the human life is not just a series of super high and super lows. There's a lot of just normalcy in life. And so it's one of the few movies where you realize that the story they are trying to tell of loneliness, of power, of friendship is more important than trying to tell you who Mark Zuckerberg really is. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I love about that movie. And I think that the ending of the film just hammers home what the point of this movie was in a way that isn't, I don't know. It's like it almost feels ham-handed, like it's so obvious, like he's sitting there trying to see if his ex-girlfriend will accept his friend request. But at the same time, it feels subtle. I don't know. It's a great ending, Bob.
I think that if you don't have the Beatles song there, then it does feel heavy-handed. And the fact that they layered in that really cynical kind of like, it's almost like a joke. You know what I mean? It's not funny, but it's Baby, You're a Rich Man, further emphasizing like, oh, like you got everything you wanted and also like you're still a loser. And I think that's what really drives it home. So that's my number three. And as we get into number two, Brad, I have poured out this single barrel rye from Luca Mariano, which is also, again, 103 proof. Brad, I want to know what you think of this, because I tried to set you up, man. I tried to give you a nice little lob to hit out of the park on the 83 proof rye. Does the 103 rye do something for you that the other one didn't?
Oh, does it, Bob? This one, I immediately got cinnamon and clove and rye just popping out on the nose. This has so much flavor. It is just bursting with an amazing palette of spiciness and sweetness intermingled together. Bob, this one, this is the first one where I'm like, oh, Luca Mariano is knocking it out of the park.
That's so funny, because of the five, I think this is probably the one I like the least. And again, I would still recommend it, but it leans into that category of rye that we've had a few times, like the Belfour rye, where it's not that it tips into mint. It's not that it tips into dill. It almost tips into like pine needles for me. Like, it is a very herbal, but also kind of bitter drinking experience.
Is it almost like a gin kind of feel?
Yeah, like a juniper kind of thing. I could totally see that. Yeah. And I think this kind of tips into that a little bit. Not a good thing or a bad thing. It's just a different kind of classification that I would put this one into, as opposed to a rye with a more sweet kind of flavor profile. Still really good, though. Like, I'm on board with it. But I do think it's funny sometimes how you and I, especially when we drink a flight of whiskeys like this, how our rankings can be like the complete inverse of one another.
Yeah, I mean, the beautiful thing about it is whiskey's just fun. It's fun to have friends to drink whiskey with, because yeah, you're going to disagree. You're going to find ones where both of you just fall in love with it, or both of you hate it. But then you're going to find ones where you're like, what the hell are you talking about, man? This is horrible. And the other person loves it. Like, that is the fun of whiskey. And honestly, I'm glad you mentioned like the idea of doing flights together. I think that doing flights with your friends, especially if it's like a blind flight, can be an absolute blast. So if you want to like add something to your whiskey tasting arsenal, do a few blind flights on your own and then invite your friends over for it, because it's genuinely a blast to do.
All right, man, we're getting into number two here, and I'll go ahead and volunteer myself. This was hard to choose between the number two and number one, but I'm going to go with the ending of the 1972 classic, The Godfather. And it's because, man, like, talk about great final shots of a movie. So yeah, you've got that last 30 seconds. Well, I mean, even before that, you've got the last like 5 minutes of the movie where Diane Keaton's character Kay goes in and confronts Michael about killing his brother-in-law and says, you know, he says, don't ever ask me about my business. And just this one time I'll tell you, and then lies right to her face and says that he didn't do it. And she's satisfied, and she kind of goes out to pour herself a drink. And as she goes out, these other guys slink in and, you know, go to kiss his hand, and they call him Godfather for the first time. And you get this shot from inside of the room Michael's in, looking out at Kay as the door is closed on her. And it is just this absolutely beautiful visual metaphor for what is to come with Michael and what he has become, and the fact that he's already pushing people away and closing people out and lying. And damn, dude, it's just such a fantastic ending of a movie. You know that stuff is going to hit the fan. And even before they made the sequel, like, I think if they had just stopped right there, it would still be a perfect ending.
Dude, it's one of the best lies told in cinema history. Like, the way he just draws her in, earns her trust and confidence, and then just blatantly lies to her. And then that look of knowing on her face, where she's satisfied, she thinks he's telling the truth. And then as, like you said, they kiss his ring, they call him Godfather, as the door closes, you see that look on her face, and you just know for a fact that she's like, oh, I'm on the outside. I will never be in his inner circle. Like, that just... there's so much acting going on in their faces in those moments, and so many emotions. I love it. Love it, dude.
You haven't seen Godfather 2 yet, have you?
I have not.
All right, so we'll get around to it eventually, but they mirror that shot in the second movie at another crucial point in the movie. And it works every time. Like, hey, if you want to, aspiring filmmakers, if you want to demonstrate somebody getting shut out, then just go ahead and do the obvious thing and just show them getting shut out.
Shut them out.
It works perfectly. All right, Brad, what's your number two?
My number two, and once again, we're still in movies that we watched for this podcast. My number two is the 1996 classic Fargo.
Oh, nice.
Bro, the whole movie is about how it doesn't pay to be bad. And the movie ends with like if you blink, you miss it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like it just ends with this really boring, normal scene of Marge and her husband just sitting there, and her husband is like complaining about not getting some award. And Marge is just kind of like, oh, well, it'll be all right. You don't got to worry about it.
So?
3 cent stamp.
You're Mallard?
Yeah.
That's terrific.
It's just a 3 cent.
It's terrific.
Hoffman's Blue Wing Teal got the 29 cent. People don't much use the 3 cent.
Oh, for peace. Of course they do. Whenever they raise the postage, people need the little stamps.
Yeah?
When they're stuck with a bunch of the old ones.
Yeah. I guess.
It's terrific. I'm so proud of you, Norm. Heck, Norm, you know, we're doing pretty good.
I love you, Margie.
I love you, Norm.
And, like, you just see that even her husband is grasping for something beyond his station. And the epitome of goodness, Marge freaking Gunderson, is just satisfied with her position. Like, she just dismantled this entire criminal operation. And she goes home and is comforting her husband over a lost, silly award at work. Like, yeah. It's the epitome of a cinematographer showing you what's important in the movie and the morals that they are going after in the most subtle, chill way. I love it. It's so, so good.
This makes me so happy because I remember recording this episode with you, with Kenny, I think, from Bourbon Pursuit. And, you know, you and I were just kind of like, hey, I think there's something to that final scene. And the more we talked about it, the more Kenny was like, whoa, I've never seen it that way. I love it when you and I just kind of hit on something like this. And, you know, just through talking it out, that scene really is the key to the whole movie. And it doesn't really put the movie into focus until that last 30 seconds. Everything seems like chaotic and random and kind of nihilistic. And then you have Marge come in and just kind of contextualize the entire thing. You're right, Brad. It's a great ending.
Yeah, actually, I think you're wrong, Bob. I think the scene that contextualizes everything is the wood chipper.
The world is a wood chipper, my friend.
that's right. Yeah, I mean, that's if it was another Coen Brothers movie, it probably would have just ended with the wood chipper.
Tommy Lee Jones just dreaming about a wood chipper.
And giving like a gravelly narration.
All right, man. It is time for our number one. Brad, I guess I'll let you go first because we want to be able to tell people when the spoilers are coming. So Brad's going to give his number one. I'll let him give the name of the movie. If you haven't seen the movie, please feel free to skip ahead about 2 minutes and we'll continue from there. But Brad, hit us with your number one movie ending.
So, Bob, the fascinating thing about this movie is that there's actually multiple iterations of it. But I am talking about the 1968 classic Planet of the Apes.
Oh, now not the remake with Mark Wahlberg,
not the 2000, what was it, 2000, 2001.
Man, when they come down and show Abraham Lincoln as an ape. Abraham Lincoln.
I honestly have never seen that remake.
Oh, dude, don't do it.
Maybe we'll do it as a bad movie bonus at some point.
Have you ever seen Andy Samberg do his impression of Mark Wahlberg?
No, I haven't.
I'll have to send you the link, man. But there's an SNL skit where it's just him like walking around a farm talking to farm animals. He's like, hey, goat, how you doing, goat? And he sounds just like Mark Wahlberg. But that's essentially Planet of the Apes, is him being like, hey, monkey, what are you doing, monkey?
Oh, man. Yeah, I feel like I need to watch that and just skip the remake at all costs.
That's pretty much it.
Put that one into a wood chipper. Yeah, so if you haven't caught on, I'm talking about 1968 Planet of the Apes. If you haven't seen that movie, then stop listening and go watch it, you buffoon. Bob, when I was like, I don't know, 12, 13, 14, I watched Planet of the Apes with my dad. And, you know, I grew up watching old movies with my dad, so it wasn't weird to watch, you know, movies from the 60s. It felt old. I was a kid. I probably got bored at points. But I'll tell you what, man, that was the first time I was ever just like shell-shocked by a movie ending, right? Like, I had probably watched Empire Strikes Back, which if I have to say spoiler warning for that, then I don't even know.
Stop, I mean, we've done it on the show, so we've already, yeah.
Yeah. So like, I probably watched Empire Strikes Back when I was like, I don't know, 6, 7, 8. So there's a certain sense of like, I don't think I got hit by the ending of that movie because I was so young that you don't even realize how big of a like twist, you know, the end of Empire is. Whereas like Planet of the Apes, I was old enough to understand what the Statue of Liberty was. I was able to understand like, oh my God, like they were away from Earth and they came back to Earth and this is what happened. And that ending was like this twist ending that, like I said, I was shell-shocked as a young teenager watching Planet of the Apes, and it's just always stuck with me as one of the best endings of all time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know that it might be a cheesy pick, it might be on everybody's list, but for me personally, just, oh my gosh, dude, that movie ending wrecked me as a kid, and it still just sticks with me as one of my favorite movie endings of all time.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great ending to pick, especially like as a representative ending. Like, that is the epitome of a twist ending. Like, you did not see that coming, and it did it at such an early stage in movies where movies didn't typically have a twist ending unless it was like a whodunit, you know? And for that to hit you and that to be the last thing you see before the fade out, like, what a sucker punch of an ending. I think it's a great choice, man.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Bob.
All right, so we're drinking our last whiskey here, and that is the Francesco Viola Signature Bourbon, which is 107 proof. So we've increased from 83 to 103 to 107 here. Brad, this is, we're drinking at the same proof point that we would drink like a Pappy Van Winkle or a Weller Antique. What are we picking up here on this bourbon?
Bro, this is freaking eggnog. Like, every single time I take a whiff of this, and I've been nosing it for a while now, like waiting for it to stop smelling like eggnog, and it doesn't. This is one of the most delectable noses I have ever smelt on a whiskey.
Yeah, man. You know what? I was having trouble kind of finding words to describe what this tasted like, because I knew it was kind of creamy, but it had that really distinct, almost custardy flavor to it with those spices. And as soon as you said eggnog, it just completely clicked for me. This absolutely tastes like eggnog. And I almost want to mix it with eggnog just to see, because it seems like it would pair so perfectly, especially Hartzler Dairy eggnog, the best eggnog on earth that we sell here in Ohio. Man.
Bob, I honestly think that we need to do a whole bonus episode just to, like, we need to get the CEO of Hartzler eggnog. I forget the fact that it's not a whiskey company or a movie company. It has nothing to do with our podcast. Hartzler eggnog is one of the greatest things on God's green earth.
So here's the funny thing. I reached out to them like a year ago and I was like, hey, we want to do a bonus episode like for the holidays. And they were like, absolutely, send us your idea. And I just, at that point, I was like, oh, what's my idea? Because the idea is just like,
please, your eggnog is,
please send
is
us
delicious.
Free eggnog so that I can drink it and talk about how good it is. Because there's really not much we could do with it other than just put whiskey in it and say that it's good. But I still want to do that. So Film and Whiskey Nation, if you're willing to listen to a whole episode of us just talk about how good this eggnog is that you likely can't get in your area, let us know and we'll totally do that.
Dude, honestly, if there was a way for us to send a sample or like a whole freaking bottle of Hartzler eggnog to every member of Film and Whiskey Nation, I would do it in a heartbeat.
I would too.
I would pay the money. I want more people to experience Hartzler eggnog. So here's the shout out. If you're ever in Ohio, in the Amish country, Akron, like Worcester, Akron area, go to a local store in the Christmas season, find Hartzler's eggnog. It is in a glass bottle. It is the greatest stuff ever created. I don't. Did this just become a top five episode about Hartzler eggnog?
I think we've kept the people in suspense long enough with this last number one pick. But my number one pick is actually Hartzler eggnog. Best ending ever.
It does have the best ending because it lingers for freaking forever. It's so good.
All right, this might be unsurprising, but my number one pick for best movie ending ever, it's there for a reason, and it's Casablanca. Brad, it's just, it's perfect. It is like, watching the end of that movie is like just going home for me. Like, it's just this feeling of, it will never get better than this. The script is incredible. Everything about the last few minutes of that movie, from here's looking at you, kid, to her getting on the plane, to him watching the plane take off, to him shooting Major Strasser, and then Captain Renault having the option to turn him in, but saying round up the usual suspects and just being like, you know, I got your back, Humphrey Bogart, to them walking away and planning their escape, and that great final line, I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship. It's the best ending ever, 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 ever in movies. And honestly, Brad, like, I kind of want you to go back and watch Casablanca again, because it's been long enough now. And I think we've seen enough movies with kind of mediocre scripts that I think you might be ready to appreciate that script a little bit more than you did the first time we saw it.
Oh, Bob, I actually just watched it maybe 7 or 8 months ago.
Oh, for real?
I had some friends who'd never seen it, and I was like, all right, well, we're going to sit down and watch Casablanca.
And what's your verdict?
Oh, 9.5 out of 10.
9.5. How do you not give that a 10, dude? Like, what is keeping you, other than just spite for me? Like, what is keeping you? I was going to
say, at this point, it's 100% spite. if we ever get it onto a revisit, I will give it an honest go around and try to see if it gets a 10 out of 10.
Yeah, all right. All right. So those are our top fives. We also want to say thank you to Luca Mariano. Brad, I like, legitimately, honestly, truthfully, this might be the first time that we have had a company send us this many whiskeys that I think I would recommend all five of them. And if I had to rank them, I mean, gosh, I think that the two higher proof bourbons would be my one and two in either order. And then I actually think that both of the lower proof ones would be my 3 and 4. And then that rye would be 5, the 103 rye. But honestly, man, I don't think you can go wrong with any of these whiskeys. They're all really good for what they are.
Bob, for me, the order is reverse of what we did them in. I think that signature Francesco Viola 107 bourbon is knocking it out of the park. Like, if I had to give that out a score out of 50, it'd probably be in the upper 30s. It might hit a 40. Like, it is out of this world. The flavor is just complex and interesting and rich and deep and full. I love what Luca Mariano is doing. And that rye honestly comes close. That 103 rye is one of the better ryes I've ever had in my life. So, Luca Mariano, keep doing what you're doing as you bring your own product to bear. Like, keep in mind what you've done with the sourced whiskey, because I just think you guys are doing a phenomenal job.
All right. We want to know what you think, both of the whiskey for the week and of your top five movie endings. What's a movie ending that you think we left out? We'd love to hear your take on it. You can find us on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Film Whiskey.
Or you can let your voice be heard on the Film and Whiskey podcast. Leave us a voicemail on our website, which is anchor.fm/filmwhiskey.
We'll be back on Monday with another regularly scheduled episode. But until then, I'm Bob Book.
I'm Brad G.
And we'll see you next time.